realization of Srila Prabhupada. Perfection and self-realization cannot be attained by any kind of yogi unless he engages in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For that is the only auspicious path. Please repeat. Perfection and self-realization cannot be attained
by any kind of yogi
unless he engages in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For that is the only auspicious path. That knowledge and renunciation are never perfect unless joined by devotional service is explicitly explained here. Now, yujyamanaya means without being dovetailed. When there is devotional service, then the question is where to offer that service. Devotional service is to be offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supersoul of everything. For that is the only reliable path of self-realization, or Brahman realization. The word Brahma Siddhaye means to understand oneself to be different from matter, to understand oneself to be Brahman. The Vedic words are Aham Brahmasmi. Brahma Siddhi. Brahma Siddhi means that one should know that he is not matter, he is pure soul. There are different kinds of yogis, but every yogi is supposed to engage in self-realization or Brahman realization. It is clearly stated here that unless one is fully engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot have easy approach to the path of Brahma Siddhi. In the beginning of the second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that when one engages himself in the devotional service of Vasudeva, spiritual knowledge and renunciation of the material world automatically become manifested. Thus, a devotee does not have to try separately for renunciation or knowledge. Devotional service itself is so powerful that by one's service attitude, everything is revealed. It is stated here, Shiva Panta. That is the only auspicious path for self-realization. The path of devotional service is the most confidential means for attaining Brahman realization. That perfection in Brahman realization is attained through the auspicious path of devotional service indicates that the so-called Brahman realization, or realization of the Brahma Jyoti effulgence, is not Brahma Siddhi. Beyond that Brahma Jyoti, there is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Upanishads, a devotee prays to the Lord to kindly put aside the effulgence, Brahma Jyoti, so that the devotee may see within the Brahma Jyoti the actual eternal form of the Lord. Unless one attains realization of the transcendental form of the Lord, there is no question of bhakti. Bhakti necessitates the existence of the recipient of devotional service and the devotee who renders devotional service. Brahma Siddhi through devotional service is realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The understanding of the effulgent rays of the body of the Supreme Godhead is not the perfect stage of Brahma Siddhi, of Brahman realization. Nor is the realization of the Paramatma feature of the Supreme Person perfect. For Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is Akilatma. He is the Supersoul. One who realizes the Supreme Personality realizes the other features, namely the Paramatma feature, the Brahman feature, and the total realization is called Brahma Siddhi. Now yujyamanaya bhaktya bhagavatya kilatmani sadrishosti shiva panta yoginam brahma siddhaya. Perfection and self-realization cannot be attained by any kind of yogi unless he engages in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for that is the only auspicious path. Om agyanatam randasya gyanam gyana salakaya Chakshum Lutam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manam Vistam Japitam Yenam Bhutale Sayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Sambhatandigam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adaita Garara Shivasri Gaur Bhakta Vrindam Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, here Kapila Muni is indicating the superior or absolute nature of devotional service. So, in the yoga system, there are many different types of yoga. Jnana yoga, Raja yoga, Hatha yoga, Karma yoga. So all of these different yoga systems, they are, the word yoga means to link or to reconnect. The first important aspect of yoga is that one should understand that he's not that body. Without understanding that one is not that body, there's no question of spiritual life. There's no question of yoga. To become completely situated in that platform of Brahman, this is called Brahma Siddhi. Brahma Siddhi, Siddhi means perfection. So there is a plane of perfection. At the moment we are in the imperfect plane. The material world means imperfect. There is incomplete. At every level there is incompleteness. Everyone is feeling inadequate or incomplete. So no one can say they're perfect. Nobody in the material world says they're perfect. Only a fool. If you ask anyone, are you perfect? Who will answer yes? And if they do answer yes, who will accept? Isn't it? If you say, are you perfect? But yet, every single person wants to be perfect. Isn't that wonderful? That even though no one is perfect, everybody wants it. Wouldn't it be easier not to be perfect? And then you could have it. But the thing we can't have, which is perfection, everybody wants. So perfection means completeness. The living entity is complete because Krishna is complete. Purnam. Krishna is Purnam. Purnam means where there is perfect and completeness. Because the Supreme Personality of God, it is perfect and complete. Therefore, everything that emanates from Him or comes from Him is also perfect and complete. So, any kind of incompleteness is on account of incomplete knowledge of the complete. Because there's incomplete knowledge. So, the different yoga systems are different aspirations for different types of perfection. But here, Kapila Muni, Kapila Dev is very clearly indicating that without devotional service, perfection cannot be obtained. There cannot be perfection in any path, regardless of whether it's karma or jnana or hatha or whatever type of yoga system. Perfection cannot be there. Because the perfection of Brahma Siddhi is that one must understand Brahman. Atata Brahma Jignasya. This is the first invocation of the Vedanta Sutras. Brahma Jignasya. Jignasya means to fully understand what is Brahman. So Brahman is manifested in three different levels according to Vedic authority. There is what we call Brahma, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. Brahma eti, Bhagavan eti, Paramatma. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead is manifested in three different stages of Brahman. So this stage of Brahman realization is the beginning of understanding that one is actually different from the body. Understanding that I am something different from the body. I have different quality than the matter or the material world. In the material world, consciousness is absorbed in matter. And on account of this absorption in matter, one is caught up in the entanglement of a certain type of body. Body means gross body and also mental body. There are two types of envelopes which wrap up the living entity. Just like if you put something inside an envelope, but you want to be sure that it's properly contained, then you put that envelope with inside another envelope. So you get double. So similarly, the living entity is enveloped or packed up inside a gross material body, and also inside the gross material body there is subtle body. Subtle body means mind, intelligence, and false ego. So yesterday we were studying how the lust or material consciousness is manifested in the sitting places, which is actually the sitting places of this lust. Who can answer that one? We read it yesterday. What are the sitting places of lust? The senses. What else? Mind. What else? Anyone? Intelligence. So this is the subtle body. The actual senses are subtle. Although they're manifested through the gross body, they are related with the mind. If you study your senses, you will find that the first activity of the senses is at the level of the mind. As Krishna explains, that by contemplation of the senses, sense objects, one develops attachment. Attachment comes from within the mind. Just like at nighttime when you're sleeping, your physical senses are not active, but your mind is active. So you're still active, sensually. Sometimes you're eating a nice apple, or sometimes you're chasing after sex life, or sometimes you're climbing a mountain or jumping off a cliff. You're doing many things even when you're sleeping. So the mind is directly related with the senses, because the senses are all centered around the mind. The mind is the reservoir of all sensuality. So the yoga system generally is control of the mind. Without control of the mind, there's no question of spiritual life. There's no question of yoga. So therefore, Krishna is explaining that one must control the lower senses. The lower senses are controlled by the higher senses. In other words, your senses are controlled by your mind. So if you capture the mind, then, as it says in the Nectar of Instruction, that there's vegam, different types of pushing. Manasa vegam, there's the pushing of the mind. The pushing within the mind, we have certain pushing going on. What is that? Manasa vegam. Vachya vegam, that there is the pushing of the tongue, the belly, pushing of anger, krodha vegam. So within the mind there is pushing. And this pushing is coming from the false identification with the material body. As Krishna says, that this ahankara vimudatma, from the ahankara, from the false identification with the body, these pushings are there. As soon as you are identifying too much with your body, you can see this in animals. Animals are being pushed along by their senses. Every animal is always eating, isn't it? Have you ever found an animal that doesn't eat? You won't find an animal that doesn't eat, because that vacha vegam, that pushing of the tongue, is very strong in animal life. So some animals, they eat all day long. From the moment they wake up, munch, munch. They practically don't stop. Cows, goats, sheep, they're always eating grass. And the belly becomes full up. So everyone is always very happy when their belly becomes full up, isn't it? The more your belly gets bigger and bigger, the more someone feels happy. So when the belly is full up, then you notice that as soon as your belly is full up, your mind is pacified, isn't it? If your belly is not full up, your mind is very disturbed. If you see someone who's not eaten, they become very quickly angry. Have you noticed that? Krodha. Krodha means anger. Someone who doesn't eat nicely, they become very angry because they become very frustrated. So this is described in the Bhagavad Gita. This is called Anamoya. Anamoya means the Supreme Personality of Godhead has manifested himself in the material world in the form of foodstuffs. So God is there also here in the material world in the form of very nice food. So you can also eat God here, you see? Because the Lord has manifested himself in the material world so as to give pleasure to the living entities. So this foodstuff is there. Sex life is also there by the mercy of Krishna. That's described also in the Bhagavad Gita. So these types of pleasures of the material world, they're also a manifestation of Krishna's energy, but they're not Krishna. They're separated energy. Separated. Krishna says, "Behold my separated energy." This earth, water, fire, air, ether, etc. So this pushing of the mind and the belly causes a desire for enjoying sex life. That's the next. If one does not control the tongue is the most difficult to control. Actually, if you can control the tongue, it is said in Vaishnava literature, Vedic literature, that one can have some possibility of controlling the mind. Because the tongue is so voracious, it always wants to talk nonsense. Any old rubbish that comes along, it can talk. If you check how many times your tongue wants to talk about Krishna in a day, you can check today. You analyze today how many times your tongue wants to talk about Krishna. How many times you feel that craving or urge to talk about Krishna. So much craving that whoever comes by you, you stop them and say, "Prabhu, I want to talk about Krishna. I must talk about Krishna. I must." But if you have some gossip or some rubbish to talk about, the tongue is wagging like anything. Tongue cannot stop wagging. "Yes, but I heard it. It's definitely, I heard this thing. It's really important to understand. Did you not hear it? I was the one who heard it. Did you hear it also? Amazing. I heard this thing." So this is the nature. If you go everywhere, just like in the morning, Prabhupada said, the birds are getting up. They're making a lot of noise. Birds wake up. They're tweet, 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 tweet. And all different sorts of noises. The crows, quah, quah. So you hear all these different noises. But all of them are useless. They have no meaning. They're just simply some chattering. They even have a phrase now called the chattering classes. There's a whole society of chattering people that chatter away day and night. So this chattering, talkativeness, is always about something to do with the body, something to do with the material world. And therefore, it increases our attachment to the material world. We are always increasing our attachment. Maya means her business is to increase our attachment to the material world. Therefore, she is always enticing us and giving us lots of opportunity to increase our attachment to her, to Maya. So therefore, one who is aspiring in the path of the transcendentalist or the spiritual yogi, he has to realize, first of all, I am not that body. I am not this mind that is changing continually, the mind that is different every moment of the day. Your mind is different in the morning, in the noon, it's different. One minute it's happy, then it's sad. One minute it wants to cry, next minute it wants to laugh. Next minute it gets angry over nothing. So if you study the mind, you'll find mind is what? Chanchala. Chanchala means that thing which is always changing, which has no fixed up business. So the nature of the uncontrolled mind, it has no fixed up. It is not fixed up. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita is also explaining this. If we study, of course everything is there in the Gita, but in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord is explaining to Arjuna that what is the nature of the mind? Krishna says, So here Krishna is saying, Yam sanyasam iti prahur yogam tam vidipandava nahi asanyasta sankalpo yogi bhavati kaschana. What is called renunciation, you should know to be the same as yoga, or linking oneself with the Supreme. O son of Pandu, for one can never become a yogi unless he renounces the desire for sense gratification. For one who is a neophyte in the Eightfold Yoga system, work is said to be the means. And for one who is already elevated in yoga, cessation of all material activities is said to be the means. A person is said to be elevated in yoga when, having renounced all material desires, he neither acts for sense gratification nor engages in fruitive activities. One must deliver himself with the help of the mind and not degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. For him who has conquered the mind is the best of friends. But for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy. So the system of yoga is primarily to conquer the mind. One has to conquer the mind because by conquering the mind, the senses automatically become conquered. By conquering the senses, one can then direct the senses. You see, senses and mind require direction. Just like we can understand, our whole business in life is to find out some direction. Everybody is going in a certain direction. And that direction we go in, it may come in the form of religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, or even liberation. But everyone in the material world is searching after a particular direction. They want direction. So what direction we have to go in? In the material world, there are so many philosophies and different systems by which society is guided in a certain direction. Of course, most of all, people are directed in economic development and sense gratification. Because economic development and sense gratification, they are prayas. There are two types of direction. One is prayas and srayas. One is the immediate result. Everything is based on result. Everything in the material world is for some sort of gain. Whether it's a material gain or a spiritual gain, one has to be always gaining something, because that's the nature of greed. Greed means, how can I gain something? Now, one may want to gain a lot or a little, but there will always be some gain. So this prayas means immediate gain. In the material world, we can have some immediate gain. So we want to have immediate gain because we're here for the business of exploitation. Our business is exploitation, so if we can gain something very quickly, all the better, isn't it? Why wait around? Why hang about? Let's get it now. Come on, let's go. So therefore, this is called Rajagun. Rajagun means passion. In the mode of passion, there is an increase of activity and longing, hankering, lust. So people are very speedily running around trying to gain something immediate. That immediate gain of the material world is actually cheating, because nothing is gained very easily in the material world. If you want to gain something, you have to pay a price. There is a price to everything. So generally we see that even in mundane society, if someone leaves school very quickly and tries to gain something quickly, so they get a job in Safeways or some supermarket, because they get immediate money, isn't it? At the end of the week, they've got their £80, whereas their friends who go to university, who go to college, who go to become doctors or whatever, they haven't got that money because they're engaged in what is called Sreyas. Sreyas means ultimate benefit, the ultimate benefit. So immediate benefit and ultimate benefit. Of course, in the material world, the ultimate benefit is also not the real benefit, because it's related with the body and not with the soul. But we see that even in the material world, for an ultimate benefit of becoming a doctor or becoming a very qualified person, you need to sacrifice. One has to sacrifice. So this sacrifice is very much required for obtaining higher benefits. If you want something immediate, then you don't want to sacrifice. You can steal it or cheat it or get it very quickly. But if you want ultimate benefit, then you have to perform some sacrifice. So the sacrifice of spiritual life is that one must practice this jnana vairagya. One must actually search out jnana. Jnana means knowledge, and vairagya, detachment. Because without jnana and vairagya, there can be no ultimate sreyas, ultimate benefit. Of course, you can avoid jnana, and you can avoid vairagya, but you will not get any ultimate benefit. You may get prayas, immediate benefit. Just like if you don't want knowledge of engineering, you can become a road sweeper, immediate benefit. You get your £20 a week. If you become a highly qualified engineer, you can get £400, £500, £600 a week. So even in a material sense, if you want something immediate, you get lesser value. So in the spiritual sense also, one must cultivate transcendental knowledge. Because by knowledge, mind is controlled. Mind is controlled by knowledge. Because what is knowledge? Knowledge comes from the intelligence. So Krishna says, the Dami Buddhi, Yogam Tam. From this Buddhi, Krishna gives, he says, from within the heart, I give the Buddhi intelligence by which you can come to me. So you cannot gain spiritual life. You can be given spiritual life. You can't gain it. You have no qualification. The senses are completely inadequate for spiritual life. The body is completely inadequate for spiritual life, as is the mind and senses, the intelligence. Because these things are all products of the material world. If you want to attain to the transcendental plane, you have to take shelter of transcendental knowledge. You cannot take shelter of something mundane to experience something transcendental. It's not possible. It is not possible to use something mundane to get something spiritual. But it is possible to use something material in the service of transcendence and transcendence. But you cannot use transcendence in the service of the mundane. That would make God a servant of matter. So spiritual life can only be given directly by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore Krishna says, for those who are constantly devoted to me and worship me with all of their hearts, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. I, sitting in their hearts, am directing the wanderings of all living beings. From me comes all knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness. They all come from Krishna. So the yoga system can never be separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because yoga means to obtain the platform of what is called Brahma Siddhi. Brahma Siddhi means perfection in Brahman. If we want to be perfect in Brahman realization, Brahman means the energy of God. Krishna is Brahman. So the energy, just like here, we call this Maya or matter. So the energy of the spiritual world is called Brahman. So Brahma Siddhi means perfection in Brahman realization can only come by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because Krishna is the reservoir of all transcendental energy. And he does not allow anyone and everyone to whimsically enter into his transcendental abode. Just like we see this very practically in the material world. You do not allow anyone and everyone to enter your house. Isn't it? Suppose you just put an invitation. Everyone in Kampala can come in here. No. Everyone is choosing who they want to associate. Because that person may not have your intentions at heart. If they enter your house, they may want to steal from you. They may want to murder you. They may want to do you harm. They may want to rob you. So naturally you are selective who you allow to enter into your house. So in a crude example, similarly, Krishna does not allow the living entities who are envious, who are rebellious, who are actually spending their whole time trying to imitate him, trying to usurp him, trying to take over his position, trying to establish themselves as God. He does not allow such entities to enter into the transcendental realm. So Krishna says in the Gita that only my devotees can understand me as I am. Others cannot. So this perfection of self-realization cannot be attained by any kind of performance unless one engages in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because only by devotional service can you please Krishna. Krishna is pleased by service. He is pleased by service. It's not a, you can sit there pressing your nose and standing on your big toe and Krishna is going to be very impressed. Because you may be able to do all sorts of wonderful gymnastics, or you may have all sorts of wonderful cities, but that will not impress Krishna. Because Krishna is the master of all yoga. He's the master. He's known as Yogeshwara. Yogeshwara means the master of all yoga systems. He is known, also known as the master of all mysticism. So, therefore, there's nothing which can impress Krishna. It would be like trying to impress the sun by using a torch. Suppose you get a torch and you want to impress the sun. Hey, sun, come here. Have a look at this. I have a very good torch I bought in Kampala. Are you not impressed? So you cannot impress the sun by using a torch. So, similarly, you cannot impress God with anything. There's only one thing that God is impressed with, and that is humility. Because humility is the quality of complete and absolute surrender at the lotus feet of Krishna. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya has very specifically said, Trinada Pisanik Chena, Tarora Pisisnana, Amarina Marina Ketanya Shadahari, that without the humility of devotional service, complete and utter surrender, there's no question of progressing on the path of the transcendentalists. Because as long as you think that you have something to bring to God, then you will not be qualified to enter into that realm. The realm of the spiritual world is the plane where everyone is 100% totally and utterly at the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the material world, this quality is not perceivable, because nobody in the material world wants to be humble, because humility is seen as weakness or some sort of inadequacy. Therefore, the ugliest quality of the material world is weakness. No one can tolerate someone who's weak in the material world. They're ugly. If you see someone who's weak, you want to step on their head, you want to beat them up, you want to throw them out, you want to get rid of them. Because someone who's weak is very unattractive in the material world. What is very attractive in the material world is someone who's very strong and powerful. Someone who has loads of money and who's very knowledgeable and very strong and wealthy and famous. They're very attractive. But someone who's very weak, someone who has no money, no beauty, no knowledge, no strength, no fame, they're nobodies, isn't it? We call them nobodies. Why do we call them nobodies? Because they haven't even got a body. They haven't even got a body worth looking at, isn't it? Their bodies are useless. They're useless. But in the spiritual world, that's the highest quality. You see? Akinchana. Akinchana means completely free from anything. One who has nothing. One who is completely and utterly helpless at the lotus feet of the Lord. He is the most attractive to Krishna. That doesn't mean that one has to be a moron or something like that. It means that one has to be 100 totally under the shelter of Krishna. Of course, one may be very powerful, very beautiful, very strong, very famous. But it is a question of surrender, whether one is totally and utterly surrendered unto Krishna. Then those qualities become glorious. So without that connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all of the qualifications, whether there is no qualifications or whether there's a lot of qualifications, they're all disqualifications. You understand? In that sense, that without Krishna, everything is useless. That may sound a very radical quotation, but the point is, unless someone has something has connection to Krishna, it has no spiritual standing. It may have a very glorious material standing, but it has no spiritual standing. And without spiritual standing, it has no significance. It is only another phantasmagoria or bubble in the ocean. There are many big, big personalities who have come to this world and perform wonderful feats and perform wonderful gymnastics or political maneuvers or become very wealthy or powerful, but they're all bubbles in the ocean. Where are they now? Just like Prabhupada was in France, he said, here is France, but where is Napoleon gone? Where is old Napoleon? He's withered away, a few old bones in a cupboard, under the ground or in the floor. So if you dug up Napoleon now, would it impress France? Even though they loved Napoleon. In the same way, if you dig up the big leaders of society in the past, would anyone want to keep them even in their own house? No, because they are simply returned to dust. Before they came here, they were nothing. And when they leave, they're nothing. In between, they may create some fuss. But that fuss is not very impressive for Krishna. Krishna is not impressed by material things, because this material world is a manifestation of his inferior energy. Inferior energy means it has no significance. Material world has no significance to Krishna. What has significance to Krishna is if you use this material energy to please him, then it becomes very significant. You can understand that there are millions of flowers on this planet, but if you bring one girl one flower, she can be impressed, isn't it? She can be impressed. There are millions of flowers, but if you bring one flower to one girl, you may get yourself a wife, isn't it? You see? So you can see the significance. There may be millions of flowers, but if you bring one flower, just like Romeo and Juliet is there, so the boy is bringing the flower So this flower causes this love. Love is there. So Krishna says, Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam Yome Bhakti Priyajati. So Krishna consciousness is very simple. Krishna is more impressed when you bring something in love to him. If you do something in love, it is not that he needs that thing, neither does he require you. You are not required by Krishna, or anything you have is not required by Krishna. You may be very impressive to the mundane world, but to Krishna, we are like bumbling children. Just like sometimes the parent is watching the fumbling child, and we see that as an example, a big man, but the child is fumbling around, but sometimes the child brings the sweet and offers the sweet, even though they've half eaten it. Sometimes you see that, that a parent is watching the child is chewing away on a piece of, sweet, and then it offers the sweet to the mother or father. Then the mother and father, they're actually their heart is moved. They think, oh, little old Johnny or Fred or Daisy or whatever, they have thought of me. They've given me some consideration. This is love. So in the same way, the living entity in the material world is really a fumbling idiot because he has no knowledge, no intelligence. Basically, in the material world, everyone is condemned by the stringent laws of the material energy. But if within that energy one offers something to Krishna out of love, then that will be his criteria for going back to home, back to Godhead. There's a very nice story in the Nectar Devotion of one yogi, devotee, sitting on the bank of the Ganga, worshipping the Supreme Lord. So he used to worship Krishna by offering prasadam to Krishna in his mind. So he would make this very delicate and wonderful feast for Krishna. And he would sit for many hours in meditation, preparing this feast for Krishna. He had nothing, because he was renounced, a kinchana, he had nothing, but he had his mind. So he's using his mind in the service of Krishna, manaseva. So he's making very nice feast for Krishna. So he's making some sweet rice for Krishna. But the nature of the mind is also to be a little forgetful. So he forgot, is the sweet rice still hot or is it cold? So he was thinking, I can't offer this sweet rice if it's still hot. That would be offensive to Krishna. So therefore he could only think of one idea, that he would touch the sweet rice to see if it had cooled down. And he burnt his finger. So by burning his finger, he woke up in his meditation. But Krishna was so happy with his meditation that immediately he called that devotee back to the Vaikuntha. He sent his spiritual plane and immediately lifted him from the banks of the Ganga and took him straight back to home, back to Godhead. So therefore we can understand what is the criteria for going back to home, back to Godhead. As Krishna says, you must offer me in love. Krishna wants our love. He wants our love, but we have no love. We only have love for ourselves. We have tons of love for ourselves. There's no limit to how much love we have for ourselves. We might spare a little bit for others if they can do us some nice service. But we certainly can't extend our love to God. That's very, very difficult. So therefore Krishna says, in the form of Lord Chaitanya, by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, then there is some hope of developing little love for Krishna. If one chants the holy name in a humble state of mind. So this is the point here. If one wants Brahma Siddhi, then he must link himself directly with Krishna. So if one is directly linked to Krishna, then automatically he is perfect in spiritual life. So this meditation upon Krishna as the personality of Godhead is the highest plane of spirituality, because this is the most confidential knowledge about God, is God's personality. What is his form? What is his personality? When you know God's personality, then you can know everything else about God. isn't it? Just like when you know someone's personality, just like if someone has a personality, you don't know what sort of characteristics they may have. Someone like may like to play golf. So it's no good buying them a cricket bat, is it? Because they may not like cricket. They may like golf. Someone may like doing something else. So if you want to know them, better to ask them, isn't it? What can be better than asking them themselves? So therefore, Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita, what is his desire? And similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam is explaining the nature of Krishna. Therefore, these two things, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, give direct perception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they are called Shabda Brahman. They are, just like we're talking about Brahman, these are called Shabda. Shabda Brahman means the Supreme Lord has descended in sound. He has descended in sound. So if you want to catch up God, you have to use your ears. The ears are the only reliable thing for getting transcendental knowledge. Everything else is useless. If you try to see God, you cannot even see beyond the four walls. If you want to smell Him, He may be a long way away for you to smell. Billions upon trillions and trillions of universes, what to speak of miles. So if you want to touch Him, may also be extremely difficult. So how will you know? By hearing. Because sound is spiritual. In the beginning was sound. Even in the Bible it says in the beginning was sound. The whole material creation is created out of sound. Everything is resting on sound. So therefore sound is the medium by which God descends. So if you want God, you have to be anxious after the sound. You have to be anxious for hearing. If you're not anxious for hearing, you will never get Krishna. So that hearing comes by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing the Shastras, and particularly hearing Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Okay, we'll finish there. Any questions at all? Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.